Hello and welcome to Owning It, the podcast that celebrates the inspiring choices made by women who refuse to simply follow the crowd and chose the road less traveled. I'm your host, Sandhya Tukaram, and in each episode, we'll have real conversations with these incredible women who choose to carve their own path because following just isn't an option. They may not be making headlines, but every one of them is a role model. So join me and let's explore the power of choice and the inspiration it brings right here on Owning It. My guest today is Pallavi Nopane, founder and creative director at Pallavi Nopane. Pallavi is the one person I know who no one can, no matter how they try, stereotype into a box. This intrepid friend of mine has journeyed from being an entrepreneur with a job at Infosys to running her own company, helping organizations evolve their brands with her creative genius. In her spare time, she has even taught herself to handmake her own shoes. Join me as we walk down memory lane of her owning it.
I want to start at the very beginning, Pallavi. Yours is an interesting story. How does one go from being the quintessential software engineer at Infosys to being an entrepreneur creating brands? Take me back to that point.
Okay. So back in 2001, when I did engineering, really, I mean, for one, we didn't have access to the internet. I was a dumbass teenager in class 12 who really didn't think that there was something beyond this, you know. You're in school and it's all fun, and then suddenly you find yourself, you know, with everything familiar around you that has ended, and you don't know what's next. So I did what my friends were doing, which was engineering at the time. And, you know, I was a little bit of a geek where I used to enjoy physics and maths. So it felt like, and, you know, in the, I think, 80s and 90s, you know, children from the last century, you think engineering is making stuff, right? Like making rockets and, like, you know, inventing things. But we were so clued out of the fact that engineering now is IT, you know, and got into engineering school. Firstly, it was this huge cultural shock, you know, to come from Calcutta to Bangalore, to the outskirts of Bangalore in Manchangri. And I found myself learning things that was so related to computers, and that was a time when we didn't even own a computer, so you literally had to, you know, like, you were coding but on paper. So it was just, it was that I would say it was that cusp between, you know, engineering being something that was building things and then the IT revolution. So we kind of in the middle, and then got employed by Infosys, which at the time seemed like, again, you know, it was this
aspirational job almost.
Exactly. It was supposed to be this aspirational job. And it, so, you know, there were 400 kids in my college, and Infosys is one of the first people who came to hire, and they picked up 100 students, you know. So it was like they almost had some kind of tie-up with Infosys. And at that time, of course, you didn't know that you're getting into this boring ass job. There were 6 months you're literally sitting on what you call the bench, which is like waiting for, you know, them to employ you in something. And that, to imagine going, they had this thing that you had to clock 8.5 hours a day. So you sign in the morning, and, you know, it's in Hinjewadi, which is like 45 kilometers away from the city. It was just so boring, you know, like, we literally, me and my friends used to sit and exchange memes all day on the intranet because we didn't have access to the internet. So after a year of doing this, oh gosh, I was so fried. And I think I was, you know, I'd injured my leg, and there was a day when I just couldn't get out of bed, you know, and I was like, God, you know I need to serve this 1 month notice. How the hell am I going to do it? So I called my supervisor, and I was like, I just can't do it. I was like, I'm not coming back to work. I'm sorry, I'm not serving my notice. And he was like, that's fine. Because, you know, they could see how miserable I was, and they didn't want to push it. And I was useless too, because, you know, I don't know what the hell I was doing. So anyway, I got out of that, and then it was like, I've spent 6 years trying to build this career, and now I have nothing. They never really wanted me to do engineering in the first place because they were quite okay with anything I wanted to do. My mom was most happy that I'm finally coming back home. So she was super excited. She was like, yeah, come. We'll have fun. And so, but I mean, I think the first few months was super depressing because, you know, you see everyone around you is on some kind of path and, you know, they're progressing from one thing to the other and suddenly you're back to square one when you were like...
You feel like you're the only one that doesn't know what the hell you wanted in life.
Right? Yeah. And you don't know what to do. So, you know, you're just like whiling away your time thinking, what am I supposed to do with my time? And, you know, is life really like this? So anyway, dabbled in a whole bunch of things. So I was like, chalo, let's experiment, you know, let's relearn. So I did all kinds of anything that came my way that I found interesting. So I joined Spanish classes and I did that for a year. And the teacher was fantastic. And they were giving out one scholarship to go to Spain and study advanced Spanish for one summer. And I think the reason I wasn't the best in class, but the reason I got it is because I had a passport. You know, the other students didn't. Hey,
reason is a reason. Let's not judge the reason.
So this $3,000 grant from the Spanish government to go and study in Spain, and they paid for my tickets and everything. It was great fun. So like this, I did a whole bunch of things. So I went back to playing the piano and I started giving my grades. I gave up till grade 5 and then I failed grade 7 because I was like, I could jump from 5 to 7. Then I did a year of dance. I did Athakalari, which is a contemporary dance institute in Bangalore. So I did that and that was like a super intense year because you were working out 10 hours a day. I had all kinds of injuries. I broke my nose. I lost my depth vision.
I actually think I first met you in that phase.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
But it was fun because it was an exploration of my body that I hadn't done. Yeah. So I think that was a great year. It was kind of like military in terms of the discipline required. So, and that's when I met Arjun. Mm. And then ended up dating him and getting married to him and staying back in Bangalore. And this was 3 years into my exploration. So all kinds of things that happened, theater had happened. And then...
So at this point, you've moved from quitting a job to wondering what the hell to exploring. And so your mind space is good at this point.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, because I kind of did a deep dive into... So almost like structured a curriculum for myself with the things that I enjoyed. So my day was still very full. So, and of course with Athakalari, it was like a full-time thing. So really you had no time for anything else. So then Athakalari got over, I got married to Arjun. We were living in this little apartment on Lavelle Road. And I happened to meet a friend on a flight who said, you know, you're artistically inclined. And I had been studying art, but everybody in Calcutta studies art. It's really not a big deal. And my mom is an artist, you know, they come from a family who appreciate art. So I'd been going to art classes since I was 4 years old. But of course, it never occurred to me that this could be anything professional. Because for one, in school, if you didn't take up science, you were like one of the dumb kids. And if you took up art or like making off the pumpkin,
it was a lost cause.
Yeah, it was like, you know, do you even know how to read? So, I never ever considered that this could be anything. But so it was always, you know, there was this perception that the hardest path is the most righteous path. So this friend of mine was like, you know, you are trying everything under the sun, try this also. There's one, there's a creative agency 3 houses down from where you are. Why don't you go?
I think it was earlier Ma, the ad agency.
No, they used to be called Creative Connections or something. I don't remember. Now they've been something else. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And I went and applied for an internship and I got this internship for 3 months. And I learned all the softwares in those 3 months. And I knew a little bit because my mom had studied digital art. So she had taught me like the basics of Photoshop and learning how to use a Wacom and all that. So I had seen it and I had gotten a little bit of experience in it and done some, you know, in one of my random jobs, which was working with a dance studio. They were like, do this graphics work for us. So I had dabbled in it. In fact, that's another funny story where in that dance studio, there was Diana, who was one of the partners in the firm. And she was like a born again Christian. And she had this vision that only I could create a poster for their next festival. She said, Jesus came and told me that, you know, you would create the poster. And I'm thinking, how am I supposed to argue with Jesus?
So you created the poster.
So I better figure this out.
So I can find intervention if there was one, right?
Figured it out and, you know, again, learned some things in the process. So yeah, then this internship happened and I was like, you know, all the things that I've learned so far, I'm able to apply it here. So learning the tools, yeah, you can learn the tools. You can learn the tools online, which is what I did. So it felt like something that could stick. And then after 3 months of internship, I felt like I was ready and I started doing projects on my own. One client of mine, Rudro Chatterjee, who is still a client, he had posted on Facebook that he was looking for somebody to design his corporate brochure. And Arjun was like, yeah, my wife is a graphic designer. So we got in touch and I said, look, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm not going to charge you because really it's my first job. And he said, no, you must.
Like you need pig in a sense.
Yeah. So he was like, no, I will not work with you unless you charge me. So, you know, he forced me to make it a professional engagement and kind of learn on the job. And this corporate brochure took, I think, 1.5 years to do because he kept adding detail and it ended up being like, even though it was my first project, I'm still so proud of it because of the boundaries that we pushed. So it became this really personal, almost like a little personal booklet where he talks about his grandfather, etc., and not at all corporate-y and cold, you know? So got pushed into it and kept learning, kept doing whatever projects came my way. And about 5 years in, you know, I found myself to be a graphic designer.
So you're a graphic designer, but then there's that conscious shift to being an entrepreneur. You know,
exactly.
It happens at some point. So I want to talk about that shift. When do you decide that, hey, this is not just about gig work.
Yeah.
This is now something I'm going to build a career with.
So again, one, I wasn't part of the community, right? So I hadn't studied design. I didn't know how to deal with clients. I had no idea how to make contracts. I didn't know what to include as deliverables, you know, in a branding piece or in a publication piece. And I knew that I needed guidance. Mm. So I was actively seeking a solution when I went for this watercolor workshop, and it was an 8-hour long workshop. And I don't have that kind of attention span. In 2 hours, I was bored and doodling and doing some rubbish. But there was this other girl in class called Bakula. And she introduced herself as a graphic designer, a packaging designer, actually. And she studied at Pratt, which is one of the big graphic design institutes in New York. And she'd worked with Ralph Lauren. And I was like, I want to learn from her. So I just randomly approached her and said, I want to partner with you. And she was like, who the hell are you? She's like the weirdest girl in class suddenly comes out of me. So she was obviously not very receptive to that, but she was like, you know what? I'm okay to try out a project with you. And I brought the project, you know, it was Anand Sweets. So I said, this is my client, it's my project, let's do it together. And of course, she had nothing to lose. So we did it together and we had a blast. It was great fun, you know. We got along like a house on fire. She's as sloppy and lazy as me, like working out of our pajamas, you know, in bed. So it turned out to be a great equation. And because she'd been doing it for 15 years, I learned a lot of the business side of things from her. Mm-hmm. So she created my proposals that I still use today, the invoicing format that I still use today, and also how to structure the deliverables. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what she told me is that at the moment, and I can be transparent about this, she was like, how are you billing your clients? So I said, I was like, I charge 30,000 for the logo, then like 10,000 for the visiting card, then 10,000 for the letterhead. And she said, don't do that. She said, I charge 1.25 lakhs for a branding project that includes all of this, because the main piece really is cracking
the creative input, right?
Yeah. You know, once you've cracked that, then applying it to a visiting card or letterhead is not that much extra effort. So that's not the piece that, you know, that you should be giving an option on. It should be like, you know, I'll do the branding piece for you and I'll give you the stationery whether or not you want it. So there's an idea of how it was applied. So I was like, wow, like nobody tells you these things, you know, in the industry. So I understood, and I still follow that to this day. You know, a lot of people even today come and say, I just want a logo. But I don't do it because I know that it's not going to serve them and it's not going to serve me. So that's how I knew, that's how I jumped from being a graphic designer, a freelance graphic designer, to then becoming an
owner. Having a business.
Yeah, having a business.
Today, you're a, you know, a well-respected entrepreneur in your space. You have some really amazing clients. And, I don't want to sound like a fangirl, but the quality of your work is particularly good. I want you to talk to me about the challenges today as a somewhat seasoned entrepreneur versus the challenges when you started. And and also in that, if you can talk about some of the brands you work with and learnings. Yeah.
I think in the beginning, the challenges were more just not knowing how to run systems, right? It was not having employee contracts in place, not knowing how to hire, not knowing how to reach out, all of that. So I would say it was all kind of internal. Today, the challenges are perhaps a bit more external. For one, I think one of the biggest challenges for any creative person is that your time is finite, and you would know as a consultant, right? That at the end of it, your time isn't scalable. So then you have to find a way to groom the next generation of talent that for you to be able to scale. Or you play a different game where, you know, you become the best at what you are and you play a PR game where you can charge the earth and people just want that connection to you and they pay. So I'm kind of in the middle of these two paths. I haven't quite decided which way I will go. But at the same time, I'm a private person and I don't find myself very excited by the game that one has to play, the PR game that one has to play, which is...
To me, that's your catch-22, right?
Yeah.
I'd like to touch on that. How do you balance Pallavi, the creative person, which is really who you are, with the needs of running a business and the entrepreneur? Are you saying that you're discovering that balance or you're giving up on it? What are you thinking about? Unwrap that a bit?
I would say that you indirectly helped me solve this piece because you connected me with Chaiju. And all of last year, you know, I tried to unravel solutions to these kind of blocks. And one thing he told me is that, you know, you don't have to do what other people are doing in terms of being visible. Being a creative person, you can find a creative way of being visible. So then, you know, what part of yourself do you want to showcase? I'm figuring that out and I realize that it doesn't have to be me physically who has to be present at events. It doesn't have to be my face. Rather, it can be my thoughts, and that I have to be more generous with really sharing where the work comes from. And that has worked really well for me because I think then people know that this is authentic. They feel like they know you. They can trust you more. So how can I be visible is a creative challenge, which I'm solving.
The other challenge you and I have spoken about a lot is the talent challenge, right? About the time that you have, and there's only so much of you.
Yeah.
And of course you want to hire talent, but then what's that inflection point of maintaining the quality that you're known for and then having talent and struggling with perhaps not getting that quality?
Yeah. So the talent piece, firstly, there's a tactical piece to it where, you know, you have to have enough of a reach that firstly, you have the choice to hire the right candidate. For me, that was a tough one before because I didn't know how to reach out to the right audience, you know. So that I have figured out a little bit more. So now the number of applicants are much higher. So I'm able to get more quality applicants, number one. Number two, I think there's a little bit of what I have figured out is the pieces that they can do and the pieces that I need to do. So to kind of reconcile and accept that the creative piece, the thinking piece, thinking outside the box piece has to be done by you. The understanding of the client has to be done by you. But a lot of the application, a lot of the extensions, a lot of the vendor relations, post sort of client management can be done by the team, and that I have to train them to do it, because
that's the only way you can scale.
It's the only way I can scale, and those are things that they can do. So to kind of figure out that what is it that they can do and what is it that I have to do, you know, why is it that people are coming to me in the first place? So I'm working on that. It's definitely a lot. I have a lot more bandwidth than I did before because of the minute things that I used to get into before that I don't right now, without affecting the output, the quality of the output.
If you solved for creativity and time, is your ambition like really big? What's your level of ambition? I want to understand.
I can tell you,
the founder of this organization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually have a long-term vision. I feel like I don't really think that far. But I can tell you that this year, and I can tell you numbers. For me, this year, my goal would be to bring in revenue of about 1 crore a month, which is 12 crores a year. I'm nowhere there. I feel like it is possible, but there are certain things that I need to fix. There are certain leaks in the system that I need to fix, which I'm working towards more strategically. I want a team that is about 15 members strong with the kind of, with different creative minds. So I want to hire illustrators, I want to hire digital marketing people. So I want to have a boutique agency with really, really good talent and a sort of covering the spectrum of what a new age business would need.
And I want you to get there. I mean, your level of talent needs that ambition. But I want to now talk about something else we've spoken about a little bit. And this is more in the context of other emerging entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Looking back, what were things you wish were in place already for a first-time entrepreneur?
That's a tough one, because I think, firstly, I think it can be now, and there are a lot of resources available today. Like, you can get a proposal format or an invoice format off the internet, because there are so many creative entrepreneurs who are willing to almost sell their digital products and services, right? So I would say the only thing that I wish was available then and now is some kind of a comprehensive course that had a selection of the best resources, you know. How do you learn this? How do you learn this after that? And this is what you should have learned. I mean, of course, I'm sure that's what they do in college, but since I didn't go to college, it would have been great for me to have access to those resources. So what I've done, at least on my part, is that on my blog, I have uploaded all of the workshops that I've ever done over the last 3 months. So if anybody wants to comprehensively learn this on their own, they can.
No, thanks. I'm going to include that link in this conversation. Are you good with money as a businesswoman, Pallavi?
Again, I mean, what do you compare?
Do you know how much, are you good with the budgeting side of things?
No, I don't think I am. I don't actually, I don't keep track of, you know, the number of hours I spend on a project. I don't keep track of how much I've spent. In my early years, I made absolutely nothing. I think till year 5, I was earning 3 lakhs a year. which is ridiculous, because, you know, I would take a project and spend half a year doing that. So, but I think that I don't regret it, because money has never been front and center of my practice. It's always been the exploration which has been front and center, and the exploration, because that's what interests me, right? My mind has to wander, my mind has to go to places that it hasn't been before, to learn things from people. And it's that exploration that obviously takes time, but also in the end stands out. So I'm not good with money, but I feel like, again, it works in my favor, because I'm not being calculating or transactional, and I know that that's what lends to quality. And if I ever were to become, say, the best in India, it would be that, you know, that non sort of
not compromising on quality, and the money will follow that anyway.
Yeah, like somebody who pays me, you know, X versus somebody who pays me 10X, I put in the same amount of effort and be as excited about both, because it doesn't matter what you got paid. You've forgotten that once the, you know, the invoice is closed. After that, it really is just about how, you know, how exciting this is.
I want to shift to something that I feel very strongly about normalizing. I talk a lot about mental health. You know, I've struggled with that in the last 2 years. And I really think it's important to normalize it.
Mm.
I want to ask you how you nurture mental health. It may not be a conflict, but there may be a conflict with the requirements of being an entrepreneur, and there are many aspects to that.
Yeah, oh gosh. I mean, I've struggled with this too. In fact, I think last July, I felt like I was at a real crossroads and I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was questioning, why am I doing this? I'm kind of adding to this very capitalist culture of the world. You know, I'm creating more junk, and really, you know, is this what I was meant to do? And I think for 3 months, I really couldn't do very much work because it didn't feel authentic. You know, it didn't feel like this is where my heart was. But of course, I think the clarity came for me. I did get hit by depression, clinical depression, on, you know, and I started taking medication. The medication took a couple of months to settle in. And then I did this spiritual retreat, which, I don't know, did wonders for my life. It was like this sort of load that just vanished, you know, and I felt like I could assimilate a little bit more into the world, whereas earlier, oftentimes I felt very lonely, you know, even with a room full of people, there was that feeling of loneliness and longing that was very unexplained. And for me, I think it was a combination of the medication and the spiritual work that really helped me center. And once that happened, I think I'm a lot more confident in now being okay to limit my time with anything, whether it's my team, whether it's with clients, whether it's any sort of commitment, right? I don't commit to things easily. I think there was this inherent fear of not being liked or not doing enough or not being good enough, or, you know, this thing that you would fail. After this whole mental health episode, I feel like I'm actually better off for it, because it broke down something in me, but it also gave me this deep sense of self that I was spreading myself very thin earlier. And somewhere, I think it maybe came from a certain insecurity, you know, that people wouldn't like me or that clients would find that this isn't worthwhile signing up with me. But after this whole mental health episode that happened and the spiritual workshop that happened, firstly, I think I developed the need to distance, right? Because I had to distance. And realize that, wow, it's okay, you know, the world goes on. And number two, that I didn't need to overcommit, you know, that it was good enough. What I was willing to give was good enough, the energy, the time, the quality. So now I take it easy, and, you know, my day.
You work on your own terms. And
I work on my own terms, you know, during the day. If I want to take a nap, I do. If I want to I sort of allow myself to work on one thing at a time rather than trying to do five things at a time, you know, which doesn't really work. So I feel like just be a lot more intentional with everything, including my own time and energy now.
I think a lot of times we allow the noise of the world to get into our space. And then before you know it, you're defined by things that you have no control over. And things happen.
And why is this whole hustle culture so glorified? You know, what I don't understand, you know, I don't want to appear busy. You know, I want to say that the reason why I can't make it to this appointment is because I want to nap. It's not because I'm busy, you know.
Pallavi, the hustle culture is a lot of us going through this cycle, right? Mm-hmm. When you actually break it down, you probably will find that a lot of us are going through the same struggle you described.
That's right.
And then at one point, it falling apart and having to intentionally change.
Yeah.
I just think it will happen in a gradual phase where more people start questioning, is this worth it? Because where it came from and where it is, I think we all contributed to it and we all absorbed it in a sense. And I think the more of us who start questioning it and saying, I actually don't want that for me.
Yeah.
And making that and leading the way with that, I think will slowly change. It will take some time, but I think it'll change.
And I don't want to appear, you know, I don't want to appear, like, I don't want to say I'm working hard. If somebody asks me, how has your day been? You know, I just want to say, oh my God, hectic, long day, just because it feels like, you know,
busy and
productive.
Important.
Yeah. It's okay to say, you know, I had a cool day. I, you know, watched some TV. I went for a walk. And
it's okay to say exactly what you've been through.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's been what you've been through. So, I think very early, I realized that in my mid-20s.
Wow.
I woke up one day and said, I couldn't move physically. Yeah. I couldn't move because I'd committed to something that really didn't feel like me. And it felt so intensely against what I felt. I couldn't move. And consciously, I started making those choices that I will do only what I want. That makes sense to me. And it's not being a rebel. It's not trying to prove a point. It's just, this is what works for me. It may not make sense to anybody else, but you know, and I feel there's so much liberation because it doesn't mean because you're on this path, there are no other issues and no other challenges. There are enough challenges, existential challenges, but I don't think this should be one of them. So no, I'm more power to you for going on that path. I want to end, Pallavi, with what would you do differently? I know you said perhaps not, and maybe that's going to be your answer, but hindsight being 2020 and where you are and all the wisdom of today, maybe it's about the choice you've made now. Would that have been something you did earlier, or you needed to be here to make that choice? Is there something you would have done differently?
I think that I would have found ways to be less isolated. I was isolated without even knowing it, you know, whether it was talking to people about work challenges, whether it was being transparent, whether it was even recognizing that this is how I feel. I would have done that. And then I think everything else would have fallen into place. So if I had just recognized that, you know what, that's actually being isolated. You know, trying to do it all on your own, trying to figure out how the wheel turns. I mean, you know, those answers are out there. You can talk to people about it, whether how digital marketing works or whether sort of just less ego. I would say that's what I would change.
Oh, and that's a good way to end. Thanks, Pallavi. You know, I've been wanting to do this with you for a while.
I hope you didn't find it
terribly painful.
No, it was most enjoyable. Thank you for listening to me rambling. And
not at all. You will be surprised how many people will resonate with this. So I'm glad.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sandhya.
Thank you for joining us on Owning It. With every conversation with women who are taking control of their narrative, I'm constantly inspired. Don't forget to tune into the next conversation with yet another woman choosing her own path and owning it.